Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Welcome along. It is the kickoff. It is Will O'Callaghan from Off the Ball sitting in for Cathal Minogue. My belief is that because Tipperary are about to reappoint their All-Ireland winning manager Liam Cahill tonight for another term, Cathal has decided to make a long weekend of Halloween as a result to celebrate that. So he's off. Vinnie Perth is here with me. Vinnie, how are you keeping?
Yeah, really good.
This is going to be an interesting weekend, I think, in the Premier League. So Liverpool have ended that run of four successive defeats. Manchester United finally get two wins in a row in the Premier League under Ruben Amorim. So we'll ask if they've turned a corner. Crucially, when it comes to corners, Arsenal score from them and score from more than anyone else. They've got a quite remarkable 10 set-piece goals from just 8 games this season. The Gunners lead the way into the weekend ahead of hosting a faltering Crystal Palace, who were beaten last night in the Conference League. And Sean Dyche is back, baby, and he's back with a win. They beat Porto in the Europa League 2-0. So all that to look forward to on today's show. We might kick off, Vinny, with Anfield last week. So you were telling me before we came on, you have a slight leaning towards Liverpool, or maybe a historical love for the club.
Yeah, I think I've started to become a little bit neutralised over the... I think when you're involved with sort of coaching, you sort of... you get so much into your own thing that I spent about whatever it was when I stopped playing 10 years coaching, that you no longer worry about your team as such result or any of that stuff, and you just move on and quickly. So, but I grew up sort of... my first memory of football was around 88... I was obviously around that time is actually when Liverpool were at their very, very best, like 87, 88, 89. Rush went, came back, Aldridge, but then you'd that Barnes, Beardsley, Helton, sort of outstanding. And even the sort of, they only had a 13 man squad, but even like someone like Craig Johnson was that flash fella came off the bench. But that was peak football for me in terms of the greatness of...
Ray Helton, by the way, reckons their team kind of 87, 88, that team is the best of the Liverpool teams.
Yeah, I still think... I discussed this before on a different topic, and we went off on a tangent where Liverpool beat Nottingham Forest 5-0 is probably the best performance of the last 40 years. Ray Helton scored, I think, the first goal, that little dink chip finish that he has in his locker. Absolutely outstanding, and Barnes that day was just class. And it was we think now we're not in the Forest, and we probably don't see how big of a club they were at that time, but that performance and the manner in which they've done it is probably the best thing I've seen the last 30-40 years, absolutely. And it's sad that it's getting on that long, but it is. Yeah. It's that long now since that sort of Hansen in his heyday, you think of Helton and we think of, you know, what we're searching for in Irish football now, but you think of the impact he had in the Premiership, and you add then somebody like Ronnie Whelan is probably, for whatever reason, one of the most understated sort of footballers we've ever produced.
He has an absolute wand of a boot. So I did an event with Ronnie a couple of years ago, so it gave me a great excuse to go back and watch Ronnie at his pomp.
Yeah.
And he'd be the first to say maybe he adapted a little bit after picking up an injury and maybe went a little bit deeper. But when he was dictating the tempo for Liverpool, one of the best passers you'll ever see.
Yeah, and they were such a passing team. We think how football evolves and shapes and systems and all the tactical analysis we talk about, but that was a proper footballing team. We think Pep is the only one that's ever made a team pass, pass, pass. Well, no, go back to that 88, 89, around that time. And you look at Whelan was right in the heart and the centre of that for such a long period. And we think of, say, big FA Cup final days and how well he played. You think of the one, I think it was against Spurs, when he bends that one into the far corner of the old Wembley there. And remember, we weren't saturated with football, so you get a DVD maybe or a VHS for Christmas, you put it in, press play. You bought match, you read up on all that stuff, you waited for match of the day. And you probably enjoyed those moments more, those special moments, whether it was Doug Leash taking on his chest and putting into the far corner of the old Stamford Bridge, as opposed to the Aguero goal is now almost a TikTok sensation, as in it was just before TikTok. But you know the point to make, those big moments are just coming and going. Back then, in late 80s, early 90s, they were all like moments to savour, I think. And I think that's the big difference now. I think you savour the big goals back then. Now you just move on to the next one.
Well, even on the Hillsborough season, ITV were in direct conflict, I think, about the matches being shown at the time. So very few games were actually on TV. So yeah. we were even getting fewer being yeah. beamed over here. Okay, if you're on the East Coast, you were probably able to guess ITV yeah. or UTV maybe coming in over the Irish Sea, so you're able to watch them. But that season, they actually had reduced games. It's so weird for football fans now who might be listening to us, where you can watch pretty much everything. 4 o'clock this Sunday, 2 o'clock games on Sky Sports. You can watch four of them at the one time. You can multi-screen them. Back then, it was oftentimes one game a week.
Yeah, and the joy you got out of a midweek game. I remember watching the Everton and Liverpool game that same season. Remember when Dalglish finally resigned? Mm. And it was an amazing game. It was in Goodison. I think it was either 2-2 or 3-3. It was a decent score and draw, 2-2 or 3-3. But remember Dalglish just dropped that sort of head in the, and you could see the anguish and the pain. You didn't know at the time and of what it was the stress of everything, the Hillsborough, the managing of people he had to do and the sort of grief that stricken club it was at the time. And he went shortly after that, and Liverpool never really found a feat until Jurgen Klopp walked in the door so many years later that the knock-on effect for that was lasting. And we've seen bits of that with Ferguson leaving Manchester United, that the big, and if the decisions, the right decisions aren't made, the knock-on effect for these huge football clubs. But that's sort of where my first love of football came from. It was as simple as the old Hitachi jersey, that type of stuff. Funny enough, Real Madrid, I got a Real Madrid kit. And now you see every kid has every jersey, but to walk around Tala in a snow white jersey, like, I was proper proud of myself. I loved that sort of, when you think of Higuero and Sanchez and those type of players, that was, and talk about seeing Spanish football, you almost seen none of it.
Like, just heard about it.
Heard about it, yeah. But I had a fascination with Real Madrid.
So I think Sanchez, I'm sure one of the listeners will correct me here, had an entire, I think, one-touch goal-scoring season in either 89 or 90.
Yeah, it was around that same time.
It was headers, yeah. free kicks, or penalties.
And I remember then, that's the thing, you'd be reading about this special player that only scores in one touch, and I was sort of finding my way. I was starting to play football under sevens, eights, that type of stuff, really young age, and these were the people you looked at, and I've often had the debate, and I've had to sit through the odd Champions League final deciding whether to support Liverpool or Real Madrid on the day, and just said, I'll just go with the flow, you know, so being happy at the end of it. Mm. And then that sneaks into Gazzetta Football. Was brilliant, wasn't it, when you think of, like, that AC Milan team. So there's a trend here. Steve Davis was one of my heroes. The people that won, I followed as younger people. But Steve Davis, even though everybody wanted Alex Higgins, I wanted Davis. No, he was the best. AC Milan were just like that Baresi team. It was around that time Gullit was there, Van Basten. They were like a joy to watch. Boban.
He was like one of my favourites to watch. They were just such a stylish team.
Yeah, and but I don't know whether it's because we were starved, going back to that point of football, but it was like watching... It was like watching the movies, watching AC Milan play every so often, or Real Madrid, when you got that little moment, and we've seen a little bit more Liverpool, but they were like football on they were movie stars. And I know every footballer now is in theory a movie star, but these people were just special. And there's a lesson in that starving people for sort of content, and all of a sudden give it to them, that you appreciate it more. But football was good back then, and we think it's analysed more now to the inch of his life. We get that, and that's great. It's brilliant, but back then it was kind of special. Like what went on, and
I wonder, does it help a little bit that you only see them every now and then? Because I remember seeing that Milan team where they hammered Cruyff's Barcelona, and it was like something out of a different world where you saw the way they were playing in that game. While now everyone is analysed to death, and I reckon there's probably plenty of people who could watch the Champions League in the week just gone by, and like, you've all the super clubs. You know, last year Champions League, it was interesting because PSG and City didn't start all that well, and so they end up towards the bottom. This time round, I think you can almost look at the top 10, top 12. You have a fair idea who are going to be the top 8. You have the super clubs scoring 5, 6, 7 goals during the week as well. There is this feeling now that like the very, very best teams are really, really good, and you know everything about them.
Yeah, and it's also, You do look back with rose-tinted glasses. Like, it's a little bit like, loads of different examples that sort of bug me. I remember, and I'd obviously be close to Evan Ferguson, and I remember, like, doing something. I don't generally go online, but I was doing something and I was reading something and ended up seeing it. Somebody, the comment about Evan scoring, he should have scored the one chance before that. So the thought process isn't, he's just scored the winner for Ireland. Mm. He should have scored the chance before that. And it's amazing the way we're overanalyzing the thing. It goes back to the great Paul McGrath performance in USA 94. I challenge anyone to watch that game back and tell me Phil Babb didn't play better on him than today. And we don't see it that way.
To be fair to Paul McGrath, he always says that Babb was fantastic.
Babb was unbelievable that day. Mm. You know, you think of Houghton's great goal against Italy. We talk about Charlton was just kicked the ball up high. Houghton ends up in that sort of number 10 position. He had switched John Sheridan and Townsend. Townsend gave him legs that day in the day. Sheridan comes, gets a short off. I'm going to say Dennis Ewan, I think, and goes long. Ball ends up in Houghton in the number 10 position, coming narrow off the inside. Did that happen by accident? Or do we just say Charlton just said to them, just kick along and we play from there? So we just didn't overanalyze it back then, maybe, or we look back and go, Charlton was this.
Oh, the status right now, we'll be talking about Charlton and the gegenpress.
Yes.
That's what they'll be talking about.
That's where you can be deemed all skill by shouting on the sideline, press, 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 press. But if certain people do it, it's different. So it's all them perceptions. If that fascinates me sometimes as much as the tactical end of it, that people just don't see what's happening. We're now living in a world where it's instantaneous, isn't it? Everything we see. But it's good. I'm not complaining about it. It's great to see all the football. But we did have football 20, 30 years ago as well.
Yeah. I think we can get wrapped up a little bit too much in XG and so on as well. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, it can be incredibly instructive. But I hate this idea of when you come to the end of a game and someone tries to explain it away by going, well, actually, the XG was different. And the Evan Ferguson one's a good point. And I know, obviously, you're quite close to his family and with Evan, but like some people say he's not prolific enough for Ireland, and yet he has as many goals as Robbie Keane at the same age. And Robbie Keane's probably the best striker we've ever had.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean Evan will be the best striker we ever had and continue to overtake him. He's at a certain crossroads in his career where this move to Roma looks a good move. He's got in, he was outstanding for first 3-4 weeks. Manager left people out, different things. He's now, he's battling with another striker for that position who hasn't scored last week or two, 3 weeks, and you feel like the next week Evan will now start the game and they'll chop and change. But it's a first world problem, isn't it, that he's having and we're having. We don't have 10, 12 of those headaches where people are playing in some of the best clubs. They're joint top there recently of Serie A. Like what a place to be in and playing really well. So yeah, it is. It's a fascinating one. But look, that's what the gig is. It's now, that's what everybody wants to see. That's why they're so highly paid. That's why and with that comes a responsibility that you're going to get a little bit of. I wasn't annoyed about the Evan comment. I'm just saying it's part of the game now where the sort of negativity is nearly as loud as the positivity. So we're not sitting in our canteens anymore having a cup of tea discussing the match of the day. We're now discussing this stuff online or out in the public. So it's slightly different, isn't it? And there's pros and cons to both.
Oh, there is. And look, it's a relentless weekend, including Brentford against Liverpool, which is an 8 p.m. kickoff on Saturday. People don't like the travel aspect to it, but generally it's probably a good time for someone to sit down and watch a game on a Saturday evening at 8 p.m. Liverpool themselves, they had this four-game run where they'd lost all the matches across all competitions, either side the international break. They go look a little bit shaky early on against Eintracht Frankfurt and then put five past them. Is it a case now of you think this is going to settle and that Arne Slot's going to work things out? Or are there still lots of question marks about the champions from last season?
I think there's no doubt there's questions. It is about fine moments. You go back to the game against Manchester United last week. There was a couple of moments went against them. And that's the life of a manager and you sort of live and die by them. But it feels like they're close to something. It looks like, for example, you compare them to the best team in the country at the moment, and one of the best teams in Europe is Arsenal. Mm. But Arsenal were suffering some of the same things last year as Liverpool are now, in one sense, as in just not sure to find their rhythm, whether it's right, do you need a striker, who plays on the left, who, you know, the balance in midfield. They've had some of those question marks, even this season Arsenal had, in terms of the balance between sort of Zubimendi, Rice and Eze in that team, and who else goes into it. So Odegaard is out injured. If he's fit, where did he play? So with Liverpool, it's about that balance. There's no doubt Wirtz is the biggest question of it all in terms of that midfield three of last year of McAllister, Gravenberch and Szoboszlai was so good. But I think the biggest challenge on that, Will, is that you have to involve Wirtz. People again, going back to that war we live in, we'll talk about how much he cost. I thought he had a brilliant answer to it, and not a lot of people picked up on it. The club may have paid whatever it is, 100 odd million for me, but there's players in my dressing room worth the same amount of money as I'm worth. It just happens to be one club paid from. And it's a good way of putting it. He's not the only 200 or the only 150 million player in that dressing room, anything but. So there's a lot of things that is nearly happening for him, and it may not work out in time, but I think it will. And it's around that balance. I think this weekend, when you look at it, the game against Brentford, it's probably one of the tougher games for Liverpool because of the style of Brentford. There's a directness, there's a toughness about them. I wonder around, all the talk is the balance of midfield with Salah start. I'd be shocked if it's not Gakpo up front with Ekiteke and Salah as the front three. I still think Verts will play, and I think they're not having Conor on Bradley's form at the moment. Yeah. So I think Szoboszlai plays right back. That'll be sort of, I'm at the throwing that out there, so that means I'll be watching for the team sheet. So that's the balance they've got to get right. But I think Verts is still like almost an outstanding sign. I think it's just about little moments going his way. But there's no doubt Gravenberch's injury is something to watch for. That changes the balance midfield. And McAllister hasn't hit form yet either.
And sometimes they're left a bit short midfield, again, tactically, like last week. And it's understandable. They're 1-0 down. They want to get into a position where they chase the game. And Gakpo scored. And maybe everyone looks at this differently if Liverpool get a second goal. But the fact is that they left themselves with Curtis Jones sitting in midfield, oftentimes having to stop a lot of United players coming through in those closing stages. Effectively goes to a 4-2-4. I guess in a way this probably reflects the top-heavy nature of their recruitment as well. Just the fact that they have so many forward options that they want to get on the pitch.
Yeah, I think I would have likened to see a change in fullbacks. I think in a lot of them, when you're, and that's not to go into a sort of tactical analysis of too deep, but when you're sitting into a low block, that's what Manchester United went to, particularly when you're in the lead. It's generally a fullbacks. The mistake so many teams do is they throw so many forward players in, think that's the solution.
Presumably you're just congesting the area that they're sitting in.
Go back to one of the great Irish games. I was in Lansdowne Road, lucky enough, and the Keane tackle on Overmars. If you remember what Holland did, they had about seven strikers on the pitch and ended up being easy for Ireland. So it's a stupid but a good example. But the difference is, I feel like Liverpool, the change in their fullbacks is actually more the bigger problem than the lack of form in midfield. I think that will come. But Kerkez is...
He's not the Bournemouth version of himself.
No, he's not. And that can come with a little bit of pressure. If the team is playing well and get a couple of wins in a row, then he'll buy himself a little bit of time. It's a bit like Kanate's form. There was a lot of fear, sort of worry about that in the first four or five games. It wasn't a worry for me because he always starts seasons bad or comes back from injury, and I think he's been very good actually, ironically, over the last few weeks. But now having Andy Robinson come on and flying down that wing, and then on the right hand side, I thought Conor Bradley could have scored actually twice, but I just don't think, and that's why I think he may, if they have enough players in midfield, they may leave him out. He's not at the level that
I felt like the Chelsea game did damage to him.
Yeah, I've a different view on him, Will. I think he'd done really well last year and he was sensational at times, but he was coming into a team that was red hot.
Yeah.
And had earned the respect of the opposition. And when that midfield three was so dominant, when Salah was under pressure, if you think he was coming from behind Salah, that's making Salah's being doubled up against. Now the little bit of fear has come away from playing against Liverpool. And he's just being questioned a little bit more. So I think there's a combination of them things, and he may not be the level we thought he was maybe a year and 18 months ago when he was back up to Trent.
The Salah question. So you reckon he is going to start at the GTEC on Saturday? This happened before where he was dropped for the Galatasaray game, arrested or rotated, whatever word you want to use, and then he comes straight back into the team. The reality is, I guess, he didn't finish the season strongly last year. He's only got 3 goals so far this year. One of them was the penalty against Bournemouth. If you're going to have to, I guess, accommodate him to a certain extent, where slots in, I don't want you working back, I don't want you covering the fullback, you need that output from him at the other end. At what point does he become droppable?
It comes droppable when you get to the stage where if you keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. So how long does that go on for? Mo Salah gets a buy and gets a pass for a few more weeks than most of the players. I think what you do as a manager is you try and throw him back in and hope, you know what, this is the week he scores. This is the week. But that can only go on for so long. And I think you made a very good point there. Part of last year's success was we in the game, people will call it cheating. He was that sort of high up position. But Szoboszlai done that job that, say, Jordan Henderson did for so many years. That running power and that sort of right-hand side of midfield. Often, if you go back to Henderson in the great Klopp team that won the league, he'd be going around Salah, who'd never passed him, Grant, and he'd step inside and bend it with his left foot into a far corner. Szoboszlai will do that or cover him and that just gives him that legs. Wirtz has to find, can he do that same job, if you think about it. So that's the balance where there's probably something going on there tactically, but it's a difficult one. You're looking at one of the great Liverpool players of all time. That's the legendary status he's in. But you would say there's a few weeks left in Salah probably starting without a goal, and then it's look at the firepower I have. Isak Ekitike looks a hell of a good player.
He
almost looks better signed than Isak.
Because you could change the flow of the team. Yeah. And what you could do is do something like they did midweek, where Ekitike and Isak, not necessarily playing in wide positions, but they can drift out, one drift in, make it very difficult to mark them, put Wirtz over to the other side, maybe pick Gakpo a bit more traditionally on the left. Mm. And then as a result, they can kind of flow differently if Salah's not in the team. I kind of feel if you're going to have Salah, you want him over in that right wing forward position, effectively cutting in on the left, so therefore you don't maybe have that freedom. I'm not trying to talk Salah out with the team here. I'm just thinking, if you're a slot, there has to be a temptation to go, okay, I can put Isak and Ekitike up front together and then just work around them.
You also have to manage the group well. And it's almost like the story can't become about Mo Salah, and that's the problem at the highest level, you would imagine, with the pressure that comes with that. Salah sitting on the bench, there's probably more cameras on the bench than there is on the pitch. And it's just creating a story that it's a hard call to make, but you probably don't want it this early. You wait for another couple of weeks, and that's what it feels like. But he hasn't scored in the last 7 Premiership games. That's a crisis in his world. So, it's a little bit like, I'm looking forward to the team sheet for a few reasons, and I would put Salah in. I think most people would put him in and you back him. It's easy for us to throw out the line of time to leave him out now, but I think the bigger picture for Liverpool going forward is he's probably in their best team.
Yeah.
If he doesn't return to his form, well, we've got options, great. And that's the position of strength they've put themselves in with the big transfer window they have. And that may mean, as you said, it's sort of almost a 4-4-2, which is fine. It's fine, that balance with them two strikers they have. Isak, I think, will be an outstanding signing. But there's no doubt Ekitike looks almost better than
Scott. Oh, he's banging like mace. He's been brilliant. He's got a very strong case to start in that game on Saturday afternoon. So just before we go to the break, Brentford under Keith Andrews so far. So identical record at this point after 2 months than Thomas Frank had last season. They've had some highs. I think they've played very well in some games, not got results. Played, I thought, really well against Manchester United a few weeks ago. So what's been your assessment of Keith Andrews' Brentford so far?
I just think it's been clever by Keith. It's almost been more the same. It's almost like we have a way of doing things at the club. It's just structured. It's well thought out. There's a huge amount. I mean, lucky enough to do my pro license with Keith. So I spent 2 years sort of in the same sort of classroom, for want of a better word. And what Keith's obviously a very clever football person who's had a good career for himself, and he got every inch out of that career, you would say, until the latter stages when he sort of injuries and that picked up on him. But he's also very studious, and you can tell that the role, like when he got the role as a sort of set piece coach, that made sense to me in terms of the way he structures things, the way he sees the game. And then when you see, there's no doubt getting the Brentford job was a bit of a shock to everybody, in the sense of it's a big jump, and would he not been better going for someone more experienced? But because he got himself so embedded in Brentford, and because of the way he could back up the stats of the work he was doing, and that how that manifests itself in results, meant that, do you know what, it's a natural step forward. And it just looks like it's copy and paste. And sometimes managers go into clubs at all levels and think, I've got to put my own stamp on it. And I think he will, but that comes in time. You don't need to do that straight away. So for that reason, like when you look at them, yes, West Ham were woeful, but I thought their performance last week was very much a proper Brentford performance. And it's the one that, if they're going to finish, say, mid-table, they're the type of wins you get, and that just gives you that platform to go and finish in that sort of mid-table position, which you'd expect them. And I think that'd be a successful season for Keith.
Also, nothing wrong. I'm sure we're going to see this on Saturday night too with someone like Coyote, who's got such a long throw. You make use of that. I mean, everyone's doing it. Arsenal, top of the table, just mentioned at the top how good they are in set pieces. They will launch the ball in and have absolutely no problem doing it. And yeah, it's become fashionable again.
Yeah, it has. And it's down to... You spoke about that dreaded word XG, but it's down to things like XG. It's down to set pieces ultimately win a lot of games, and you can't just rely on that stuff, but it's part of the game now, and it creates sort of havoc. It's my only problem with the whole long throw is has to be a solution to this stuff. Is it's taken so long to get through set pieces. I just want the game played. I want the ball in play. I've often said, like, surely we can get even me or you, Will, to do it. We stand in the corner of a box and we jog from the corner of the box to the opposite corner flag. And how long it takes, even me or you, we'd say, is how long you have for a corner.
Yeah.
No longer than that. Unless there's something on and the referee stops it. So if that takes the two of us 12 seconds, 15 seconds to jog. And I mean...
A reasonable pace.
Just not even a... Just above walking pace into a slight jog, and then you time that, and FIFA say new rule, get a corner, you've got that time. The opposite fullback gets that distance from there to there, and if anything extraordinary, like a player's injured, I think it's fine, but just speed up the game. And the same with throw-ins, there comes a point where we've got to speed it up. We don't want to be watching NFL. If you want to watch NFL, watch NFL. We don't want set piece.
When I see as well that Brentford have moved the hoardings a little bit so that he can go back further to throw the ball.
I'm okay with all of that.
I saw Calafiori trying to steal a Newcastle towel a couple of weeks ago just to get the ball dried before he throw the ball in. So everyone's is taking advantage of it at the moment. That is Liverpool versus Brentford, which is live on Sky Sports at 8 p.m. on Saturday evening. You are listening to the kickoff here on Today FM. We're going to take a very short break. Vinnie Perth, former Dundalk boss, is staying with me. We'll take a look at Manchester United against Brighton, and also Arsenal. Are they the team to beat in the Premier League this year? When we come back in a sec.
Sensational! The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Now, we were talking before the break, Vinny, about Liverpool. Manchester United beat them last week. Ruben Amorim, first time he's won two league games in a row. I don't know if this is going to open up a run, because Brighton are a team who cause them plenty of problems. You know, I've only won one win in seven against Brighton over the last while, and Brighton won at Old Trafford earlier this year as well. Is this the game that brings them back to ground, or can United actually go on a run and that poor chap get a haircut?
I think this is the night. I think they do win. I think this is a real opportunity. Brighton at home. I think, yes, it is a good place for Brighton to go. They've had some success there. Have to think United will go and win there. I think it's the manner in which they played last week was very, very good. Would you put even €1 on my own pocket on Manchester United or any team with Amorim the way he's so structured into what he's believing? No. But it feels like this could be the start of not necessarily like title race or anything like that. They're way off that. But it just feels they might be closer to them European spots then. Couple of weeks ago, wouldn't have shocked me if someone was saying, you know, they'll be around 8th or 9th in the league come the end of the season. I think they may be closer to 4th, but they've got to win games like this. It's finding that balance. And at home, the onus is on them a little bit now. Do they bring in Sesko back into the team, for argument's sake? He's looked like a good player, to be fair to him. They're almost there. They're almost there. It's about getting the balance right. The challenge is, and the sort of thing that will swing at Brighton's way is Manchester United will press them, I think, and they'll go after them. If they beat that forced press, United are very vulnerable. They have been. It's the style. It's the system. Danny Welbeck has been exceptional. Probably should be getting back into an England squad. He's very, very close to it when you think of who's above him. He's there, thereabouts. So, yeah, Brighton on a on the day are a real tough opponent. Feel like United will do this weekend, but you know, go back to Manchester United. No result on with United and Brighton's going to shock me. Brentford have a real good way of playing about them.
So I think some of the things that worked for United, first of all, getting a goalkeeper who now looks solid, because early on in the year, those first few games, particularly chopping and changing up by Inder and Onana, and then there was a Grimsby result. I think at that point, the club had decided they got to pull the trigger and get a goalkeeper before the window closes. So Lamin's come in. I think he's looked decent with his feet. He's saved the ball well. And that's all they really need, is somebody who's really solid at the back. No longer do you look at them and go, ooh, do you know, there's probably a mistake in that goalkeeper.
Yeah, it's interesting. And again, I had half, I sort of red glasses on, the Liverpool red last week watching it. I accept what people are saying about Lammens, but that's the little moment, a bit of luck in it. A lot of stuff was fired at him. He didn't make brilliant saves, like, you know, Isak should have scored. Hit it straight at him, was good. He stood his ground, he'd done his job, but it wasn't like where he to go and make a world-class save or anything like that. So little moments like that are good and good for goalkeeper, and that's what's building him into a good goalkeeper. So you just don't know what you're going to get of, say, Casemiro this week. Very, very good before he came off last week. What are you going to get? You know what you're going to get out of Bruno Fernandes. Despite all the criticism he gets, you know you're going to get a good performance. So for me, the challenge is, does he bring Sesko back into the team? But that front three they have now look exciting.
It's non-negotiable. Mbeumo has to play. Mbeumo has to play. He's been really good.
Yeah.
And you get Cunha into the team somehow.
Has to play, you would think. The three of them are giving you a platform. You know, that's the what does he have around that? Is Dalot enough for him as a wing back? Is he giving you enough of a threat? Does he leave Shaw on the team? Maguire, does he change that up? Don't know. He's got a couple of options, but he also has to be attack minded. Maybe he'll feel he can sit off Brighton a little bit. Does that and they don't get the result, then the criticism comes back his way again. So
because the approach last week, I guess, putting Shaw in is to have a player to block the way Liverpool come in from the right hand side. And also similarly, I guess you start Mason Mount because you want someone to give you that extra press and somebody who's going to get through the defensive work maybe a bit more than when Cunha plays over on the left-hand side. Maybe there's an argument this time if you're playing the front foot, Sesko is the better option to put Mount on the bench.
Yes, and that's the type of team you think you're going to look at. So you can't play, well, of course you can, but you can't play with that sort of defensive mindset all the time and expect the same result. Something will have to give. So it feels like he's got to be a bit more open. I would say if this was like a 3-2 type of game going either way, wouldn't surprise me. I think both of them are vulnerable at the back. And when you break that press, both of them are vulnerable. But both have good forward options that can score goals. So I think that could be one of the better games of the weekend, actually. I think that's one that definitely keep an eye on and try and get to watch, because I think there'll be goals in it.
Top of the table, Arsenal, 3 ahead of City, 4 ahead of Liverpool now at this stage, so it's been quite a turnaround the last few weeks. Again, last weekend, a set piece leads to the 1-0 win against Fulham. They're looking for a bizarre record venue this weekend. So since 2014, no Premier League team has ever gone 3 games without conceding a shot on target. So Arsenal will be hoping for that to be the case against Crystal Palace. I have a feeling Palace will have a shot on target. They've got lots of attacking firepower despite their loss to Larnaca last night. But Arsenal's defence, they talk about defence winning championships. This is the best defence at this point of a season since Chelsea in 2005.
Yes.
Really
and
good.
What Arsenal are is, without the ball, they're almost Stoke City. Almost. The tenaciousness, the willingness to get back around the ball, all of the set pieces you add into that. But with the ball, they're almost a Man City as well. And that's the difference. There's a great balance between the two things. And what Arteta has done so far this season is they've got that balance right between almost being ugly without the ball, but being really high level tacticians with the ball, and that's made them so far the best team in the Premier League, absolutely. And they have this next window of games they have coming up could mean you could end up in December 8, 9, 10 points clear because of the challenge, like City and Liverpool play each other in that time. This Palace game for them this weekend is huge, and it's at home and they're favourites for it. But just Palace are obviously a tricky team to play against and very strong in their own rights despite the last sort of 2 or 3 games. This is a big game for Arsenal. The next couple of weeks are very winnable. and you don't want them to do that sort of Arsenal thing and just not get away. But I think they could be away and gone by 8, 9, 10 points in the next sort of 4 or 5 weeks.
Felt important the Ocres got a couple of goals midweek as well. Now, Arteta was kind of keen to point out after the match against Atletico, he was saying, look, this guy is bringing us more than goals. He's occupying defenders and it's up to other players maybe to take advantage of that space. But just to have him banging in a few goals, bearing in mind that Sporting, that was what he was all about. He was a number nine to put the ball in the net. Maybe this now kind of opens the floodgates a bit for him to score a few more.
And I think at home, Gyökeres has looked a better player at home, certainly. And I think that's a big help for him. So he does all them things that Arteta is speaking about, absolutely. But ultimately, you've got to put the ball in the back of the net. And when that's his job and that's the centre-forward's main job, Arsenal need him to get this sort of somewhere between 12 and 20 goals. Anywhere between that is enough if... And they've got the talent out. Trossard at the moment is chipping in with a few goals. Martinelli coming off the bench. And there you're speaking to people who are sort of the sidekicks to their better players, for want of a better word. Rice has chipped in over the last few weeks and Saka is almost back now to full form if he goes again. So they have it all. They look really good. They look, I think it's, but so much of that is built on what they have at the back. And it's like, that battle between Calafuori and Lewis Skelly, who's the best? Do you know what? When you think about the way Palace play, maybe Calafuori this week is, but there's other games, like if they have to play Burnley in a few weeks, or the second games where you go, Lewis Skelly is better that day. And when you're in that spot as a manager, you're in a sweet spot. Like, so they have it all going for them. Arsenal, for a long period of time, looked like 1-0 was enough for them. Mm. Now, and despite just the game against Atletico, but just now it feels like Arsenal going to beat teams now 2-3 if they have to, and will do it. And that's why they look the team to beat this season.
I think the exciting part as well is if SA Saka start to click and then if Sevi Okere starts scoring some goals, next thing straight away, they have that back six area is locked down. They know what they're doing. And if they add a little bit of extra flair and a few goals, they're going to be a hell of a team to try and stop.
Yeah, they're a microscope. Scopic view of sort of what football has become. It's become at the moment the trend is around set pieces. It's around defending well, not giving up goals, scoring chances, not giving opposition spaces, getting back into a sort of low block at speed, and then going up the other end and being class. All the stuff I spoke about is the easy stuff in football. It's easy to coach. It's not easy to take it out, but it's easy to coach. Go into a training ground tomorrow and put on a defensive session and we'll probably spend a half an hour and you might even low to 11v6. We probably keep a clean sheet if you coach players well and you get into their mindset. They're all the easy stuff, but you still have to do it. They're doing it and doing it on the pitch. As you said, not giving away even shots on target. Mm. And it's the recovery runs they're making. So we're now in that level of detail in the Premiership where they can tell the speed players are running at. So and each run will be measured. So they'd be watching video analysts, Will, and they'd be showing Declan Rice, when we were on the attack here and you had to run from the edge of your box to the edge of our box, your top speed was this. But your actual top speed might be 9.8 metres per second and you only hit 9.2. We need you to hit 9.8 to stop giving away them chances. Mm. That's the level of detail and the video clip that will come in that all the teams are doing. But when you add that to the quality Arsenal have, and you get the players hitting 9.8, whatever the top speed is, 9.7, whatever that is, add all that mix together and you end up with one of the best teams in Europe at the moment. That's what they are. Whether they can do that over a season, that's the biggest test for Arteta. Is he a league winning manager? That was questionable at the back end of last season, no doubt about it. But we're going to find out now over the next little while, and this game against Palace is crucial for that.
Yep, that's one of four games you can watch on Sky at 2 p.m. on Sunday. You can multi-screen if you want to watch them as well. You've got Spurs against Everton at 4:30. We'll take another short break. We're going to talk about Sean Dyche, Nottingham Forest. We'll come back in a sec. Now you're welcome back. You are listening to The Kickoff here on Today FM. We've been talking about all the major teams ahead of this weekend. A few other bits and pieces I want to touch on before we finish up, Vinny, for this morning. And one of those, Sean Dyche is back. He was having a press conference. He said, I don't care if you like straight jeans, you like flared jeans. It's just all different styles at this stage. But Marcinakis likes a different style. So he went, last year, Nuno Espirito Santo, thanks for getting us into Europe. Don't fancy this style, I get Ange. Ange comes in for what, 8 games? I saw someone saying during the week he could fly back to Melbourne, watch all of his games at Nottingham Forest, and he could still watch all the Crocodile Dundee movies as well on the same plane flight. Such was how short his tenure was. Sean Dyche has come back in. He's keeping it back to basics. And let's be fair, promising start with a win against Porto on Thursday night.
Yeah, I think Sean Dyche has, we think his last job is Everton. He's actually fallen up. He's lost his job at Everton and he's moved on, believe it or not.
Into a team in Europe.
Yeah. Now, in one sense, I suppose if you think of the history of both clubs, they're both very similar, Everton and Forest. So go back to our discussion earlier on. Two huge, massive clubs in English football. Haven't been over the last sort of 20 years, I get it, in the Premiership world. But the difference is, it feels like he'll have... If he stays that long, sustained period at Forest, which isn't guaranteed, he will have a transfer ability to go and sign some good players. He will have the ability... It feels like his ownership want more and more and more, and they want Europe and they want a higher level and they want to chase stuff. Where Everton, that wasn't the case.
Is that potentially a slight problem for him, though? Whereby Dyche comes in, he's the problem solver now because of the bad season they've had. Gets in next summer, American Akis goes, do you know what? I want to get more for my team again and I want to be more entertained when I come to the city.
I'm sure the $6 million a year will paper over that.
Guaranteed contract till 27. He's getting paid either way.
Yeah, and what people probably don't know is there's probably, at that level, it may be only 12 months, maybe 18 months, but there's a certain buyout that you could sign a 5-year contract tomorrow, but if we sack you, it's basically 18 months is the second, but at the same time, that's still 7, 8, 9 million. It's a first world problem. So what he's done is, there's some who go, why is he going to work for this madman? But you always think he can change people. Results will change his opinion. You always think that. I think it's a risk worth taking for Sean Dyche in terms of where he was at in his career. It's pulled him up onto sort of, if you think of the tiers in the Premiership, there's probably four. In terms of one just being relegated, one happy enough to be mid-table, and then there was one naughty. They're not elite, but they're chasing it, and Forrester in that level. Everton feels like at the moment they're just comfortable in terms of the ownership of being that mid-table team. So he's put himself into the next spear. He can always go back down the levels if he has to. I think it's a huge opportunity from, I think he'll actually be successful, but there's always that fear that in the next sort of whatever that is, you open up the paper and all of a sudden he's gone, or you turn on the radio for a morning, he's gone. And that is a concern. But I like the idea.
I think one good thing for Dyche here is that the squad are well made for the type of football that he wants to play. They definitely were not made for Ange Ball. Like, it was really weird. The team who sat deepest last year, who recovered the ball the least in the opposition, and he decided to bring in Ange, who plays a totally different style. I think Sean Dyche sits quite comfortably with this. I think he goes, get the ball to Chris Wood, put the ball in the net, we're going to be difficult to beat.
Yeah,
it's actually a squad well made for him.
Yeah, and you would think he will be comfortable. You all often get the sense that there's a bit of pressure lifted off the club with him coming in as well. Ange took all the pressure in terms of those press conferences he'd done. I loved him at Spurs. I wasn't loving him over the last few weeks. It was a fella under pressure trying to deflect, and it didn't work for him. So, but this Dyche, it feels like, has enough stature about him. He says the right things. He's smart in the press. He's clever. I think this is a good fit for now. How long it lasts for, that's different. But for now, it's a good fit. And you get the sense the players feel it's a good fit as well. And they will respond on the pitch. I think the next few weeks they'll have good moments in the next few weeks.
I hope that Ange considers his next gig a little bit more, because Celtic will definitely be tempting. I've no doubt that Brendan Rodgers won't be there beyond the end of the season with the way things have gone. I just wonder, will Ange just go, yeah, fancy another try at Glasgow? It's an awful story fit.
Yeah, it's hard to know. I could see Ange do a job in sort of in Europe, if that makes sense, whether it was a Leipzig or somewhere like that, where you could see he could get a lot more out of potentially good players and make them great players. I think Ange has that in him. I think people will criticise him, I get it, but I think he has the ability to, you know, what would we think of Ange if he won a Europa League with a sort of RB Leipzig?
He had a Premier League team lining up to sign him.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
Yeah, so I think he has the ability to do that, and I wouldn't write him off to the football sort of wasteland just yet, but I think it's probably suited outside of the madness of the Premiership, that's for sure.
Vinny, it's been a pleasure having you with us on the kickoff. The game's on Sky coming up this weekend. Then the half five kickoff on Saturday is Manchester United against Brighton. That is followed up by the late game, which is Liverpool's trip to Brentford, Keith Andrews Brentford, to give them their official title. You can watch all four 2 p.m. kickoffs on Sky this coming Sunday, including Arsenal against Palace, Bournemouth versus Nottingham Forest, Aston Villa versus Man City, Wolves and Burnley. And then to round it all off, the half past four game is Spurs against Everton. Colin Minogue will be back with you next week for the football kickoff, but it's been a pleasure to be alongside you. Talk to you soon.
The kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.